This weekend, the porches of the West Plaza neighborhood will fill with music as the Front Porch Fest brings more than 70 bands to perform up and down residential streets. In cities across the country, Front Porch Fests have been finding their way to historic neighborhoods where porch sitting is plentiful. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we'll talk with the organizer of this inaugural event. We'll also learn about the historical significance of the front porch. Plus, we'll soar to the upper reaches of our atmosphere with the photographer who sends cameras skyward in weather balloons. That's coming up right after this news. Front Porch is an American institution. It's an ideal place to sit with a cool drink on a summer night, surveying the neighborhood, winding down, feeling good, doing nothing. Maybe strumming a guitar. But this familiar scene might be one we take for granted. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and with me in the studio today is Catherine Golden, who has planned a music festival set not in bars, but on the porches of houses throughout Kansas City's West Plaza neighborhood, drawing our attention to the humblest of hangouts. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What gave you this idea?
This isn't completely original to me. I mean, there are about 18 different cities around 17 in the United States, one in Canada that I'm aware of, that have porch festivals. I'm originally from this area, but I've been living in San Francisco for the last 14 years. They do have a porch festival in Napa that I had attended and just thought it was the most awesome thing.
What was so awesome about it? Take me there with you, please.
Yeah, for so many reasons, right? What was great about it was that it's a listening venue in a way. If you go to a concert at a bar, people are clinking their glasses, and it's really about socializing with the people you come with. And the music is ancillary. And I think what I found at the Porch Festival was that music was really a core part of it. So people were sitting and they were listening, you know, they were facing the porches, they were listening, they were having picnics, and people were riding bikes from porch to porch. And it was just kind of a slowing down in a way that you don't see all the time.
That's cool. Well, this event series started in Ithaca, New York, right?
That's correct.
What's your knowledge of the real sort of seed for the overall concept?
My understanding is that the original idea was to draw attention to older, more urban neighborhoods, which is typically where you find front porches. You know, suburban homes don't typically have those. And so it was really an opportunity to kind of draw attention back to an urban core and kind of come back to that environment. And you know, urban cores often are a mix of demographics. There's a lot of young people that want to be more in the action of things. There's people who've owned the homes for, you know, their whole adult life, or maybe they inherit it from their families. And so it's a mix in a way that maybe a lot of suburban areas or rural areas are not. And so I think, you know, that the original intention, and then the architecture is just so much more interesting than you would often find in a more suburban where you have more tract housing. So that was my understanding of the original intention of that.
What's your feeling about what's special about the front porch? Is there a difference in spirit between the front and back porch?
Well, to me, the front porch is much more kind of a we. It's a more open thing. You know, I was giving the example to someone the other day. I went for a walk in my own neighborhood. I live in the West Plaza a couple nights ago, and I was walking down the street, and there were some people on their front porch on the other side of the street. And this guy that I don't think that I've ever seen before, like, raises his arm and yells, "Hey, June 14th is coming, Porch Fest." And it was interesting because, you know, it's really great that the word is out about the festival. I have to admit, for a brief moment, it unnerved me a little bit because you just don't have that, you know, that often people aren't sitting on their front porches, even though they're there. And the recognition was a little, you know, disconcerting for a second. And then I thought, ooh, how cool.
Yeah. I mean, is that kind of what you were going for?
Yeah. I mean, that's the intention. But I think it's so unusual that it caught me off guard. And then, you know, for the next two blocks, I was, you know, kind of thinking, wow, that's awesome.
Tell me a little bit about how you went from having the idea that it would be great to do this in Kansas City to actually making it happen.
Well, I'm crazy. No,
it's you know, a good beginning to a story.
Right, exactly. I just thought it would be something fun to do. I had been here about a year, and I thought I need to, kind of evaluate how it's going moving back, and I thought I wanted to create something. And so, there's a few different things that were going on in San Francisco that were community-focused that I thought were awesome, and I kept thinking, it'd be great to do here. So I just thought this would be a fun one to start with, and I reached out to the Neighborhood Association board and pitched the idea, and they were very receptive to it. I did a presentation for them. They invited me to do it, offered some sponsorship, and invited me to talk to the rest of the neighborhood and opened up some opportunities for communication, and I just went from there.
So how did you approach people about opening up their porches to the public, not just to the bands, but to the public? It's a public event.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? I think people are hungry for something new, and I think people typically love where they live, for the most part. And, sharing that enthusiasm. And, the West Plaza has kind of gone through a revitalization, I think, in the last X number of years. And so people are excited about living there and making it a distinction from the plaza to being its own neighborhood in the West Plaza. And so the opportunity to share that, I think people are pretty excited about. I mean, I initially reached out through Facebook. They have some neighborhood-specific websites and reached out through them. And people started, what was great about it is people jumped on board. And then also
they offered their porches.
Yeah, they offered their porches. They signed up through the website to offer their porches. And then they start talking to their neighbors about it, And it was a funny side problem to it was that a lot of porches signed up that were too close together to all participate because the music would overlap.
Oh, yeah.
So it was, I originally was all excited, like, wow, this, all these people are into it. And then when you Google map it, you're like, oh, that's not going to work. But it was exciting that people were talking to each other. So
do you have any concerns about how residents who didn't sign on might respond when their quiet streets are maybe a little less quiet this weekend?
I think we've done a lot of outreach trying to make everyone aware of it. You never know. But I think we have been so pervasive in our communication. It's been in the monthly newsletter that's put at every house. And, there's a lot of buzz about it online. So I'm hoping that everyone is aware of it. I think they would be. And so far, there's appeared to be minimal pushback.
Cool. Well, why the West Plaza? I mean, this is your neighborhood, but this isn't a neighborhood with giant lawns for overflow crowds or giant porches, for that matter.
That's very true. Yeah. And there's advantages to both. Obviously, if you had a much larger porches, you could fit much larger bands. And that actually was kind of one of the challenges. We have some bands. There's one band that has 9 members. And it was difficult finding a space for that band, a couple that have 7. There's an intimacy around the smaller neighborhood that's also appealing. There's advantages to both. One, a couple people from other neighborhoods, countryside, stepped up, and said, hey, I've got this gigantic lawn. And there's something about that that's really nice, too. But there's an intimacy in that small space that, people don't kind of cart out their 12-foot square and hope nobody gets too close to them. It just kind of feeds this idea of community in a way that I think maybe going to a park would not.
Well, we'll get back to Catherine Golden to talk about the Front Porch Fest, just the Porch Fest and the bands performing in it in a moment. But first, with us from the studios of WETA in the Washington, D.C. area is Michael Dolan, who literally wrote the book on the American front porch. His book is titled The American Porch, An Informal History of an Informal Place. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Well, what do you think about this Porch Fest idea? You have a background as a music critic, too, so this is almost too perfect a combination of interests for you, music and porches.
Well, when I wrote the book, I was a music critic, but since then I've become a musician, and I tend to practice on my front porch. So I think that Catherine and her neighbors in the West Plaza are really onto something. I think I might steal that idea.
It sounds like it was made for stealing, in fact. So you came to the subject of porches in a very personal way. Can you tell our listeners the personal story of how you began researching the American porch?
Yes. My wife and I bought a really battered and beat up bungalow in Washington, D.C., in an edge of the city neighborhood called Palisades in 1981. And we worked on the house for about 10 years. It was a real slog. We lived through the renovation, in the renovation. And the last thing we did was to tear off the old porch, which had been a sometimes referred to as a Florida room. The jalousied, many window panes. It kind of made the front of the house look like it had been punched shut, like an eye. And we tore that off and rebuilt it, my design, other people's labor, because by that time I had reached the point where it was more than I could do. And I was sitting out on the porch right after a thunderstorm, appropriately for your weather today and our weather in Washington. And the phone rang, and it was a friend of mine who had just taken a job with the New York Times magazine. And he said, "I need some stories. They've got to be really, really short. What do you want to write about?" And the porch was completely new. It was completely empty. I didn't have anything I could steal from for an idea. So I said, lightning, because there'd just been a thunderstorm. And he said, "Okay, right. Write about lightning. 125 words. I said, "Okay. And what else?" I said, "Oh, I could write about porches." He says, "Okay, but do the lightning first." So I wound up writing the story about lightning, but I could never get the story of the porch down to 125 words. And as I was doing my research, I realized that I was not seeing any book that explained to me why, when I sat on my porch, or when I had contemplated renovating my porch, or when I had endured my terribly messed up porch for so many years, I felt like such an American, and I decided to write that book.
Well, and there was a moment in the introduction to this book where you wrote about sitting there and thinking, why do I love this place so much? Did researching a giant book on the subject of porches bring you any closer to having an answer to that question?
I think it did. It wound up crowding my head with a lot of information about how I came to feel that way. But the thing to remember about the porch, as Catherine observed, is it is a liminal space. It is the outside meeting the inside meeting the outside. It's a place of negotiation, of reconciliation, of encounter. And when you are on a porch, or when you're on any liminal space, the most nakedly liminal space in
and
the urban
the definition,
setting is a stoop.
You did kind of define liminal, but would you mind just drawing attention in case that's an unfamiliar term to some of our listeners?
Liminal means the border between two places, two spaces. We say subliminal, below the limit. Liminal means when you step out of your house and into your porch, you are in a liminal space. When you step off your porch, you are out of the liminal space.
Okay, go on.
So that reinforced my sense of the value of that space. My research reinforced the value of that space and gave me an appreciation for the complexity of the process that wound up creating the porch as both an architectural and a social phenomenon in America.
I've been reading your book, and I love the humor of a section of the table of contents, actually. I'm going to read what I'm talking about here. Chapter 3, Out of Africa. Chapter 4, or was it out of India? Chapter 5, or was it Italy? It seems like you can find a connection between the porch and just about any society. Do you think there's something about this structure that fills a basic human need or some combination of basic human needs?
That is sort of true, except that it has to do also with the society that creates the space. In West Africa, in the pre-colonial era, every tribe had a word for an outside space under a roof raised up off the ground where people lived. That was not so in Europe. In Europe, the weather and the social climate of conquest and reconquest and aggression militated against having open spaces where people could come up and kill you.
Good point.
But in the 16th century, an Italian architect named Andrea Palladio came up with a structure that was in the middle ground of that area. Palladio took the classical loggia of Venice, or the classical colonnaded structure of ancient Rome, neoclassical architecture, and he put that on houses in the Veneto, which is the landward region adjoining Venice, where all the great families of Venice had plantations. And it was sort of like the dot-com billionaires saying, that's architecture. Let me tell you, that villa with that thing that you put on it, Andrea, I just love it because I can stand on it and look great. Now, the villas that Palladio built all had big walls around them. I know this because I visited all those villas when I was doing my research.
Nice.
And so they didn't quite qualify as that open liminal space because you had to get past the guy at the gate before you could get to the villa. Well, however, in Go ahead.
Oh, what's kind of interesting to me about the idea that there's like this sense of a need for protection within the front porch in some cultures is that everything that's yours, if you're on a front porch, is behind you. And then the outside world is in front of you. And you can kind of, it feels in some ways like a protective position.
It is and it isn't, because it's not really defensible. As the architectural historian Antonio Foscari, who's a descendant of one of Palladio's clients, said, a porch is an indefensible place. Even though you are on your porch with your stuff, you would not want to be out there if people were attacking you. You would want to be behind a wall.
Unless you were really, really tough.
Yes, I suppose that's so.
Okay, so we were talking about the American porch. And this question of why you felt so American when you were on your porch, do you have a sense of an answer to that?
I think what I figured out was that a lot of American mass media has embraced the porch as a telegraphic reference for being an American. If you look at the Currier and Ives prints of the 19th century, if you look at the motion pictures of the early part of the 20th century, the middle part of the 20th century, the porch is often used as an indicator for old good times.
That makes sense. I feel like I've seen some of those images. But from these porch fests that are all over the country are taking place in neighborhoods with lots of porches. And Catherine was just explaining that many of these neighborhoods are historic, older neighborhoods and urban cores. Can you explain why that is the case from a historical perspective? What are the forces that result in porches being clustered in certain neighborhoods built in certain time periods?
Well, in the true urban core, there aren't that many porches in an urban setting. You'll have stoops because the land is too expensive to have a porch. But, for example, in my neighborhood in Palisades at the edge of Washington, D.C., began to take form in the 1890s as streetcars were moving out of the city and making it possible to live farther away and commute into work. So houses could be built on their own lots with their front porches, on streets with sidewalks, where there was a neighborly interaction and a connection in the fabric of the street between the porch and the street. These neighborhoods often are in places in Kansas City, in Washington, D.C., in towns around the country. Often these neighborhoods, like mine, were, shall we say, let to fall into decay as the 20th century progressed. They weren't as desirable. They were not places to which people were moving. Instead, people were moving to the suburbs. But because they were valuable enough, whether to be rented out or to be sold, they retained their character. Nobody was coming in and tearing down these neighborhoods and putting up split levels.
Interesting.
Particularly in college towns, where landlords notoriously never do anything to their houses until they catch fire. You have these pockets of old houses from the 19th and early part of the 20th century into which students could move and generations of students could move and get an idea of how people used to live, really.
When and why did front porches go out of vogue architecturally? Does it say something about our changing values, or is it just an aesthetic change?
Well, it's an aesthetic change more than a values change. Architecture is just fashion in wood and nails, and everything goes out of fashion eventually. The porch became so popular for so long in the 19th and early 20th century that it was inevitable that it would be replaced by something else. The factors that are often explained for the porch's demise are television and air conditioning, but neither of those really had come into a powerful presence in our society until well after the porch had stopped being a vibrant presence in American vernacular architecture. The last surge of porch-based architecture in America was the bungalow movement of from the late 19th century into the 1920s. And it gives you an idea of how the bungalow came to be thought when President Woodrow Wilson, deriding Warren Gamaliel Harding in his campaign for president, referred to him as being bungalow-minded, as if to say he was sort of a mass media creation.
Wow. Well, you found, it seems like, about a gazillion quotes from a variety of sources waxing poetic about the front porch that are sort of culled out in an interior section of your book. And I wonder if you have one or two favorites of those that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Well, if you have your copy of the book and tell me what page it's on, I can look, because I did not memorize this book, and I read it 12 years ago.
Well, we're on about, they're in the unnumbered pages, the glossy ones in the middle.
Oh, you're talking about the hold.
Yes.
The picture hold. Yes. Well, I didn't prep for this. I didn't know there was going to be a test.
It's okay. We don't have to do that.
No, that's fine. There is one that I think sums up Hollywood's approach to the porch. It's a quote from John Updike, where he wrote, "That mythical Midwestern town Hollywood keeps somewhere among its sets. The houses were white, the porches deep, the lawns green, the sidewalks swept, the maples dark and blowsy against the streetlights."
So beautiful. Well, is there anything that you'd like to instruct our listeners who might be heading to the Porch Fest this weekend to pay attention to when they're in this neighborhood and experiencing this event?
I think I would urge them to pay attention to see which porches comfortably can contain a band, because unless a porch is big enough to hold a band, it's not a big enough porch.
Well, thanks so much, Michael Dolan. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
You're welcome.
That was Michael Dolan, author of The American Porch, An Informal History of an Informal Place. Catherine Golden, organizer of Kansas City's first ever Porch Fest, tell us a little about the lineup of bands at this weekend's event.
It's a little bit of everything, actually. It's anywhere from a single performer to bands, like I mentioned, of nine people. There's a number of them that actually live in the neighborhood, some of them performing on their own porches, which is, I think, you know, extra awesome. You know, in terms of genres, it's pretty wide also. So singer-songwriter, folk, classic, country. We have classical music. There's going to be a harp on one porch, which is, you know, a substantial piece of real estate. There's tango, there's Irish music. It really is kind of everything.
How many bands are we talking about?
It's 71 bands, I think. 71, I think, is where we're sitting at this point.
That's a lot. How did you go about pairing band with porch? Is there a special equation for that?
No. Everyone kind of has their own requests. And so trying to meet those was a little bit of a challenge. And I amused myself because I went old school and just laid out index cards on the living room floor with everyone's requests. Or, you know, I want to be at 1 o'clock. I want to be at 4 o'clock. I need to be on this person's porch because they're my friend. And really just did kind of a shell game of moving people around based on the number of people in the band, any special requests, any pairings of porches. Some porches came with bands in terms of their friends. So it really was just a matter of kind of just moving all the blocks around until I came up with a lineup. And it took about three passes to end up where we are today.
Well, do you feel like you've learned anything about your neighborhood through this process?
I have. I mean, it's interesting, you know, when you go through the West Plaza, you know, there's a lot of renters there. And so kind of what Michael was talking about there, you know, there's a certain level of non-upkeep in some parts of the neighborhood and then really pride of ownership in other parts. And it really is mixed in that way. What I have found is that people are really excited about where they live whether they're renters or homeowners. I thought there would be more renters but that would participate in this because I had this vision that it was really something that would appeal to the younger portion of the population. And what I found is it's really all over the place. So their enthusiasm was great. You know, I had a band cancel this or a porch cancel this week, and I had already booked bands on it. So it was this scramble to try to find a new porch. And someone stepped up right away, and I sent out word, and people stepped up and said they would offer their porch, and it would give them a chance to clean up their porch and do a spring cleaning, which, you know, everyone loves that. So she, you know, and she said, even if my porch doesn't work out, I'm going to use it as a reason to motivate myself to clean off my porch. So I think this kind of pride of where they live, this enthusiasm for a shared thing is really important.
One of the bands on the lineup is Old Sound. We're going to hear some of that band's music in a little bit. Could you tell us about them?
You know, they're a trio of different musicians. I love their stuff. There's probably about 10 bands that I really, really want to get out to see. I know they have a new CD coming out, and I have to admit that I don't remember the name of it. Grady is the lead guy, and he's really influential in the musical community. He's a great graphic artist. I hear his name pop up all the time. So their sound is fantastic.
Two of the musicians in this band are a pair of brothers, and I feel like the Front Porch Music Show and the Family Band are kind of part of the same slice of nostalgia in terms of maybe a time period or a vibe. It feels like and this Front Porch idea feels like a different model of from that of the expert performer and the passive distant listener in a velvet cushioned chair. I'm wondering if you can elaborate on that idea a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. And in fact, we have another band that's a family band where the dad plays drums and the daughter is, you know, teenage daughter is the singer and the son plays guitar. I mean, I think, you know, people are looking for ways to connect. And I think it's kind of the antithesis of social media in that respect, you know, going back to actually spending time together. And music is such a connector of people. And so I think that is a very, you know, it's a really big part of it. It's just it's a way to communicate in a live in-person way. It's appealing to people.
Thanks so much, Catherine Golden. This is Two Midnights by Old Sound, a Kansas City acoustic trio playing at Porch Fest this weekend. Central Standard will be right back.
Down in the bottom of a jug, dark as two midnights.